Live from the heartland and the crossroads of America, it's Tony Katz today.
Process to break the bills into four separate measures for consideration, and that is what we will have tomorrow. Everyone can vote their will and their constituents' desires on the Israel aid, the Ukrainian aid, the Indo-Pacific, and then our fourth national security package that has all of our innovations in it. Because we did this process, we got a better outcome here. We have a lot of innovations that the Senate did not consider. We include the Repo Act, which, as you know, is the use of corrupt Russian oligarchs' assets to help fund the resistance in Ukraine. We introduced the loan concept for the governmental assistance part. It'll be provided in a loan instead of a gift. We also included some really important sanctions on Russia and China and Iran, which I believe is the new axis of evil, and many of us do, and they are the ones who are the aggressors in this situation. The reality here is that if the House did not do this better policy and process, allowing for amendments on the floor in the process tomorrow, we would have had to eat the Senate supplemental bill.
That's not true, Speaker Johnson. You didn't have to do anything with the Senate supplemental bill. Tony Katz today. And we should be clear that border security should come first. Before anything else even comes up, it's a conversation I had with Senator Todd Young of Indiana. I'll share that with you coming up in a little bit. But we will see this happen over the weekend and see how this voting goes. And also we're keeping our eyes on what's going to happen with Israel and Iran, because Israel did strike back at Iran. Israel did hit an Iranian airbase, and Iran is not signaling any response at all. Major Mike Lyons, retired United States Army, will be with us to break that down. But it is stunning that here was Joe Biden telling Israel, you got the win, you knocked down all their missiles, you don't need to do anything, you shouldn't do anything, don't do anything, please don't do anything, won't somebody listen to me, where's my pudding? I'm assuming that's how the conversation went. I wasn't there, but I assume that's the way the conversation went. And Israel said, well, but we're going to take Rafah. And he said, great. And we discussed this just yesterday. Yesterday, we discussed that there was a quote-unquote deal. Israel would go into Rafah right there at the base of Gaza, bordering up with the Sinai Peninsula. And they were going to take Rafah, the final stronghold of Hamas. They were going to wipe Hamas out. But they wouldn't go after Iran. But they did. Was the go after a strong hit, or was it rather a, hey, we really can hurt you hit? That's what we're going to break down. But right now, the breaking news are these changes to Title IX. I'm trying to get a hold, an understanding of what is taking place. What is Title IX? You're talking about legislation that was part of the education amendments of 1972, as described. And it talks about the fact that if you're going to provide, you know, especially with sports, you can't discriminate on the basis of sex. So therefore, women's sports and other things have to get funding and representation, all of this. That's Title IX as we describe it. Well, the purpose of the legislation was to make the statement that women have a right to be represented. Well, then why would anybody be in favor of the transgenderism insanity gripping society that says men can claim they're women and take the spot of a woman on, let's say, a sports team? Nobody who actually believes in Title IX and nobody who actually believes in women in sports and women having their opportunities would ever believe that it's okay for a man to take their opportunities, except, of course, these suburban white women and these progressives who are absolutely in favor of men taking women's spots and erasing women. Trans women are women, they say. The only problem with that is that they're not. Trans women are not women. As a matter of fact, the whole idea, trans woman, I don't know what to do with that. Men are not women and women are not men. That is not angry. That's not me being hateful. That is a fact. This idea that trans women are women, no, they're not. Because if they were women, you would just call them women. But you don't, because you are admitting that they are not. Just the way it is. The new rules coming out from the Biden administration, they take place August 1st. That's when they take effect. As reported by UPI, they require schools to respond quickly to sex and gender discrimination, expand LGBTQ rights, and give victims more power in sexual abuse cases. Riley Gaines sees it differently. Riley Gaines, who of course came to fame because she had to swim against Leah Thomas, who is a man. Leah Thomas is a man. Leah Thomas will always be a man. Leah Thomas will die a man. He calls himself Leah. That's all right. People call themselves whatever they want. Just because you have the name Leah doesn't mean anything. Stacey Keach was an actor. I dare you to call him a woman. As Riley Gaines explains, sex is the same thing as gender identity. It means men can take academic and athletic scholarships from women. Men will have full access to bathrooms, locker rooms, etc. Men can be housed in dorms with women. Students and faculties must compel their speech by requiring the use of preferred pronouns. And if you question it, you'll be charged with sexual harassment or with harassment in general. The Title IX now clarifies that sex discrimination includes discrimination based on sex stereotypes, sex characteristics, pregnancy or related conditions, sexual orientation, and gender identity. Suburban white women, I'm talking to you. Why do you hate your daughters so damn much? You're going to vote for Joe Biden again, right? Why do you hate your daughters? Explain yourself. 833-GOT-TONY, 833-468-8669. In the midst of the madness that is the world, that is the southern border, was it Bill Mnuchin who was pointing out that border crossings are up? You've got continued action in Ukraine. You've got, of course, Israel and Hamas and Iran, but Hamas and Iran, I repeat myself. You have the constant threat of China. You have economic upheaval. But this administration thinks that this is the real good move, a move towards progress. It's not a move towards progress. It's a move towards despicableness. The people who believe that men are women are amongst the most horrible because they lie to you and to themselves, and now they want to utilize the law to make you believe the lie. George Orwell must be very impressed. Sex-based harassment includes harassment on these bases and further clarifies when sex-based harassment creates a hostile environment. That's another part of this. The regulations, quote, define hostile environment harassment as unwelcome sex-based conduct that, based on the totality of the circumstances, is subjectively and objectively offensive and is so severe or pervasive that it limits or denies a person's ability to participate in or benefit from the recipient's education program or activity. That can mean anything you want it to mean. It can mean anything. It sounded like gobbledygook. Every time you hear these people talk, you hear these people push these ideas, you're like, my God, it all sounds just so absolutely positively ridiculous. Just like this big, like mush of words. I think I actually have, yeah, I think it like this. Yeah, sounds about right. That's pretty good. That's what it is. Erasing women. But tell me now, suburban white women, how you're going to vote for Biden because, you know, abortion. Oh, abortion is so incredibly important. Oh, you have to vote on abortion. Oh, my gosh, abortion rights. They're erasing your daughters. And you're going to vote for them like they're good and they're decent. Dear Lord. I'm trying to avoid the cliche, so I'll say it this way. Every election matters, and you have to vote these people out. But more important than that, you have to pay no attention to this. If this is the way schools are going to be, it's really important that you A, homeschool, and B, change what you see as activities. Women are screwed in college athletics. They're screwed. Because wait till the guys start playing women's basketball. You think Caitlin Clark was good? Wait till you meet Susie, the 6'7" center. Susie likes long walks on the beach and considers herself delicate. Susie weighs 282 pounds and can bench 540. It's coming. And this is the world we're told that is somehow better or more decent or more caring or is standing up for women's rights. Right? Isn't that the abortion conversation? It all comes back to abortion. Standing up for women and standing up for women's rights. Oh, holy hell. Suburban white women, exactly how awful are you? I'm talking right at you. What's the problem? You allow this. You can change this. Let's see what you do. But that sound you hear is your daughter losing her opportunities. But no, you go vote for Biden. Yeah, you show me how that works. I'm Tony Katz.
So long, it's not true.
We have.
But you're talking about a real systemic change in our politics.
What's happened is we've seen decisions that used to be taken by elected politicians outsourced to unelected bureaucrats. And they've been captured by the left, whether it's the wokeism that we're seeing in our schools and universities, the idea that we've got 100 genders, whether it's the climate change, the extreme climate change policies that are undermining our competitiveness. That's what's been going on. And we need to seize back power for democratically elected politicians. We need conservative policies because that's what was successful. That was what was successful in the 1980s when we took on the USSR. We need that same confidence in the UK and the United States. We need that confidence in our values. We've got to stop the people who are undermining our countries and actually take on our adversaries overseas.
You're a full backer of Trump, aren't you?
Yes. 100%. And I think he needs to win. And people can see that across the world, that the world felt safer when Trump was in office than it feels now.
Prime Minister.
That's Liz Truss. You just heard there Steve Varney say Prime Minister. She was the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom for a month and a half. It was on her 50th day, she resigned because things were not coming together and there was upheaval. And so she is the shortest serving Prime Minister in British history, September to October of 2022. She, for good or for bad, made an effort to try and get something done. The effort backfired with aggressiveness, and she said, I'm out. Thank you, Cleveland. Good night. Very interesting argument that Trump has to win. But I think a more interesting argument about the conservative perspective. Now, is Trump or Truss here or Milei in Argentina, are these conservatives or are these populists? And we should be clear that there is a difference. And while I am a fan of conservatism, a believer in conservatism, I am not a fan of populism. I am not a fan of the idea of whims of a mob moving a president to action or a nation to action. I believe in the people having a voice, the people utilizing that voice through their elected representatives, and then a debate about the subject. So we are not engaged in overwhelming ourselves on emotion. I am not in favor of that. I am, however, like you in many ways, a huge fan of people standing up and saying, nope, we're changing it. Yep, we're fighting it. Nope, don't care if you're happy about it. Thank you, Cleveland. Good night. And Malay is one of these people. Absolutely. Javier Malay is one of these people who walked into Argentina and said, we're just going to make the changes. I don't want to hear from anybody else. We're just going to make the changes. And if people don't like it, they can leave. Argentina now wants to become a NATO member. That's interesting. NATO, a North American treaty organization. NATO that Ukraine desperately wants in. But if you allow NATO in, you now have the United States at war with Russia because Article 5, an attack against one is an attack against all. Why in the world would Argentina want to be a part of NATO? I'm not sure what the win is here. It's not that I have an opposition. It's that NATO is starting to look like something that isn't actually what it's about. NATO has one purpose: countering the Russian threat. Some people today don't believe that Russia is a threat. I believe this is the populism at play, and part of that problem is it puts you in a category where you don't look at the issue for what it is. You look at an ideology. The ideology is we don't get involved in these foreign things, and that's that. Now, as a matter of policy, we shouldn't be involved in every issue everywhere around the globe. I agree. As an equal matter of policy, we should recognize when there's a threat and make sure the threat is neutralized. The idea that Vladimir Putin is not a threat is to be ideological and not focused on reality. So maybe if it's people who want to recognize the threat for what it is, maybe you welcome Argentina, and maybe this creates an opportunity for other nations in South America. Maybe you recognize that Argentina should be a greater ally, but NATO is out of the question, if only because there could be an issue regarding NATO nations do not come from South America. Sorry, it's not how we have ever put this. NATO is Europe, NATO is Turkey, NATO is Canada, NATO is the United States. That is all and nothing else. This could be Argentina saying we want a bigger role on the world stage. While we can debate whether or not Argentina should be part of NATO, one thing we should not debate is whether or not we should have a better relationship with Argentina, because even though I am not a populist, I can recognize when people are making moves to make things better, and people like Milei are an important counter to the madness we see in Europe and in other parts of the globe, like, I don't know, Canada and our left flank here in the United States, that have no interest in reality either, not because of populism, but because of progressivism. And that progressivism must be countered. I like what I see, but my jury is still out. This NATO thing is fascinating. Meanwhile, Senator Todd Young of Indiana breaks down the non-vote on the impeachment and what's going on in Iran. So you have the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, who was opposed to Ukraine aid. But as the Wall Street Journal now puts the headline, Mike Johnson opposed Ukraine aid. Then he risked his job for it. Tony Katz, today, good to be with you. You took the Senate legislation and then you said to the House, pass this. About funding and for Ukraine and for Israel and for Taiwan. And the House said, nope, this doesn't have border funding. And now you have Speaker Johnson saying, here are these separate pieces of legislation. And why don't we send these back to you and you can pass them? And yet somehow the border is still at the end of the line, which has House Republicans up in arms. But how does the Senate look at this? Senator Todd Young joins us right now, the senior senator from the state of Indiana, my senator. I want to get into this with you, but before I do, the Senate takes up the impeachment of the Homeland Security Secretary, Alejandro Mayorkas, and Chuck Schumer brings a point of order, and Democrats decide for the first time in history, we don't have to have a trial. We think that this impeachment is bunk. What was your take and the sense of the Senate when that took place?
So I don't get outraged often. The more you consume some of the goings on in the Senate, in the House, you become desensitized to the minor outrages. But I'll say this was a major big deal. The job of the United States Senate, when any official is impeached, from the President of the United States to the Secretary of Homeland Security, is to hold a trial, Tony. And we have just established a precedent that at the prerogative of the majority of United States senators, we don't do so. And so constitutionally, this strikes me as a fulcrum moment in the history of the body, that really the history of our country. Because we can now have renegade officials who, in the proper political atmosphere, will not be held to account for their offenses. And so I'm outraged by it, and we know why it happened. It happened, consistent with your lead-in, because Democrats don't want to discuss illegal immigration, our porous border, and the humanitarian meets national security crisis associated with all of that.
I wonder... I always put myself in the position of, if I was in the Senate, what exactly would I say to Chuck Schumer? And I guarantee you, I don't think I'd last in the Senate for very long. How is the conversation not brought to him? Just what the hell are you doing? What kind of Harry Reid nonsense is this? You will regret this one day. How does he somehow get away with not knowing how detrimental this is, that you don't have the Senate performing their constitutional task?
Well, you know, it's the classic case of sacrificing short-term political interests. Indulging short-term political interests at the disadvantage of institutional kind of rules. So he has sacrificed the credibility. He has sacrificed the future, working order of the Senate, so that he might get short-term political gain. And I told you why he did it. We know that immigration will almost certainly continue to be the most resonant, the most important, the most consequential issue as we approach November. He knows that. And unfortunately, he placed that short-term consideration ahead of how our democracy works. That troubles me.
Talking to Senator Todd Young of Indiana, you bring up the border as I was discussing the moves from Speaker Mike Johnson to now bring back these pieces of legislation and state that, all right, here's funding for Ukraine, here's funding for Israel, here's funding for Taiwan, here's something else, and oh, here's some border fund, a border bill that would bring funding for the border that is along the lines of H.R. 2 that was already passed by the House that Chuck Schumer has not moved on. If I understand you correctly, you're somebody who believes in providing funding for Ukraine, that this is important to thwart the moves
of Russia short term and long term. I am somebody who believes in funding Ukraine with weapons and ammunition, not with bodies and not with specifically dollars. But is it wrong for the people to note that the border should come first?
No, it's not wrong for the people to note that. I and others have been carrying the message that we need to do something on the border. In fact, we held this issue as a precondition in the Senate, you'll recall, late last fall. We're not going to fund Ukraine. We're not going to do anything with respect to their borders until we address border security. We won. We all held together, which is not something we always do on the Republican side in the Senate. Everyone was surprised. The left caved. Negotiations were pursued. We almost had a bill. And then we know kind of where that went. People perceived the bill, I think, correctly to not be enough. But it was something. I think we also should acknowledge that. And observed fairly, can't much of this just be done by Biden under existing law? Why do we even need a bill? Now we're back to wanting a bill. So I think we'd be intellectually dishonest not to point out we're in a bit of a whiplash situation, but I support substance of AR2 the current border efforts that are being advanced in the House, which are very close to HR2. I think it's reasonable to ask for them. I just wish we would get our priorities straight because there's a certain inconsistency. What my greatest priority is right now, knowing that we're probably not going to get in this political atmosphere, members of the Democratic side, to go for a bill, is that we need to stay focused on Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan, and not weakly, timidly, meekly use the lack of a border security bill advancing. We have to avoid a war.
So I'm going to ask you just to repeat some of that. You were breaking up a little bit when you say we have to avoid a war. Give me that again.
Yeah, we have to avoid a war. We are experiencing dangers on the three fronts that we're focused on, Ukraine, Israel, Taiwan, and the Indo-Pacific. But really, the threat vectors are coming from everywhere right now. We need to do whatever we can to shore up the Ukrainian freedom fighters, the state of Israel, and the Taiwanese to deter any sort of aggression from their respective adversaries. And because a conflict in any of those areas could lead to, depending on the geography, heightened terrorism, massive increases in oil and gas prices and tanker economy, and a larger conventional conflict between NATO countries and on one hand and Russia on the other. So that's the last thing the American people want right now. For comparatively modest investment, we should be advancing these bills irrespective, I would say, in the end of whether or not we can get liberal Democrats to vote for a new border bill that will be litigated, I suspect, in November of this year.
So where I think the people are, I should say the Republican base is, and if you want to call it a Trump base, you can, talking to Senator Todd Young, senior senator of Indiana, is that you can move all these other pieces of legislation about funding for Israel, Taiwan, Ukraine, but you have to move the border first. And why not make all those other things conditional on passing the border funding, which is really said differently, why is it that the Republican Party doesn't play the level of hardball that we just discussed the Democrats playing when they're willing to dismiss impeachment?
Well, so we did play the level of hardball last fall. We won that battle in the Senate. We all held strong. We were able to get a negotiation on a border security bill. Accounts differed as to the strength of that package, but I think fair-minded people would say that it was certainly the most consequential legislation that we were expected to review and vote on border security in decades. But we decided against that because in the end, it was determined two things. Number one, Biden already had sufficient authority under existing law to use his executive powers to get border security, just as Trump had done. And number two, even if we passed a new law, he probably wouldn't follow it anyway. So we just needed a new leader. So this whole exercise was futile and gave political cover to Democrats. So we decided against advancing it. So I would apply that logic. Much of it, I think, has certain intellectual force. I would apply that logic to this situation and say, you know, I'm for the substance of H.R. 2. I'm for what they're advancing in the House. I would vote for it if it came over here. But I do think there's an important other side to the argument, which is, hey, let's just focus on Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan, because we could conceivably, as we engage in this back and forth in Congress, we could lose the war. We could lose the war against Russia, thereby causing the occupation of Ukraine, the threat from the Baltic Sea all the way, you know, down the entire European continent to our NATO neighbors, causing a massive increase in American forces needed to help shore up our NATO allies. We are treaty bound to do that, distracting us from the threat of China. These are high-level threats. The last thing we need right now is we should be focused on our economy and the things back home.
Let me, before I let you go, and you're going to have people pushing back on which one matters more, and I'm sure that you hear it from constituents and others constantly. As we speak, we're just about 12, 16 hours removed from Israel responding to Iran. Israel took out some members of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, their Quds force, a general, people who were coordinating with Hezbollah, a terrorist organization funded by Iran, which engages near daily attacks on Israel. Israel took out two of those leaders. Iran responds by sending 350 ballistic missiles and drones, trying to indiscriminately kill as many Israelis as they could. Joe Biden thinks that just knocking these things down is success and good enough, and you don't have to fight anymore, and you shouldn't respond. Israel seemingly agreed to this by saying we're going to take Rafah, and then we hear that they engage strategic strikes against Iran, possibly against nuclear facilities, and other places. The response that you have to not only President Biden saying take the win, but this Israeli striking back, is Israel raising the stakes here?
Yeah, you know, I question many of the things in the run-up to this conflict that President Biden and his administration have done, just as I questioned whether our botched disengagement from Afghanistan was really what led to Russia's invasion of Ukraine. So in this case, the fact that we just yesterday, United States imposed new sanctions on Iran, sanctions which were long overdue, that's one indicator of just how behind this administration is. The notion separately, and to your point, the notion that we should tell the state of Israel that after the first ever attack occurs, 300 projectiles, drones and missiles coming out of Iran proper across the Middle East into the state of Israel, which is where they were intended. Blessed, we shut all but one down. The notion that they should just be the bigger person, so to speak, because otherwise there's a fear of escalation, is inconsistent with their politics, human nature, and what the people of Israel want and need right now. They need to reestablish some measure of deterrence. They can do it through a narrow attack, which is what they did. I think it sends a message, hey, listen, mullahs, we're going to hit you. We can't not hit you. But we're going to make it, you know, proportionate. We're going to send a message. We don't want a broader regional war as well. It would be bad for Israel, be bad for Iran, be bad for humanity. I think that's the message that should have been sent. I think, you know, curiously, Israel already sort of understood that anyway. Now we need to support them so that they can defend themselves against terrorists and uproot Hamas and their leadership from Gaza and the rest of the area, and hopefully deter other terrorists from attacking Israeli people moving forward. No, by the way, there are Americans involved in this whole thing as well. We have American hostages. We've had American deaths, American freedom fighters partaking in the IDF to help defend the state of Israel and our shared values. So let's keep that in mind as well.
We will have many more hopeful opportunities to engage in this. Senator Todd Young, senior senator from Indiana, I appreciate you taking the time to be with us. There is more coming up. I'm Tony Katz. This is Tony Katz Today. Netflix picked up 9 million new subscribers in the first quarter of 2024. I didn't know that was possible. I didn't know there were still another 9 people who didn't have Netflix. I didn't know that 9 million people want to spend whatever it is per month to have a whole bunch of content they're never going to watch. Tony Katz, Tony Katz Today. Good to be with you. Find it all at TonyKatz.com. Netflix changed the whole account sharing methodology. It used to be you had an account, you could share it with a bunch of people. And Netflix actually encouraged that for a while in the early days. Share it with whomever. It's totally fine. No problem, no issue. Well, they put an end to it. Now you got to pay. So those people who had been getting, you know, kind of like the free deal, they either paid a small amount or a larger amount for their own account. And that's what got you to 9.33. Wall Street predicted 4.9. So, you know, it was better. Netflix has 269 million global paid subscribers. That, kids, is a business model. That's impressive. And again, for all the content you're never going to watch. And there's a whole conversation about how Hollywood is dealing with this, because where's the money in streaming if your stuff isn't being shown or you don't have one of the big deals? Where's the money for somebody who's creating the content in Netflix? How do you rise above the din? And so there are a couple people getting paid, but the vast majority, there's no place for them. It is going to be more and more apparent in the years ahead. This is Tony Katz Today.